Welcome, folks, to The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher. Every week, diving deep into the truth of Catholic social teaching and restoring all things in Christ. The Uncommon Good, live from Iowa Catholic Radio's Mercy Live Up Studios.
The Uncommon Good is on the air. I'm Bo Bonner.
I'm Dr. Bud Maher.
And I am coming to you live from the Central Standard Time Zone here in Des Moines, Iowa, the Iowa Catholic Radio Mercy Live Up Studios, Des Moines, where I am the director of the Zeta Institute for Foundations in Ethics and Leadership and the director of Mission and Ministry at Mercy College of Health Science. Bud, in Pittsburgh, in the mystical Eastern Time Zone, through the magic of robots and Lord Google, is joining us as well. Bud, how's everything going out there?
It's going okay. I'm here at the National Institute for Newman Studies. We've got beautiful weather. Our streams run with whiskey and our salad with french fries, so you're set. You're in beautiful PA.
A land of plenty. Yeah. Even an hour into the future and plenty of french fries. Hey, we have a beautiful day as well. I don't know if anyone knows. You know how, like, when your, like, arm falls asleep and you're trying to, like, pick up stuff and you look very awkward doing so? I feel like that's everybody outside right now. Like, they've forgotten how to enjoy outdoors because of how long winter was.
I feel like winter really just pushed us around this year and bullied us. You know, there's all these PSA campaigns on anti-bullying, but winter wasn't listening. And now people are just, like, really embracing spring because we had to work for it this year.
There's, like, multiple versions of the flu. There's multiple. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. So, yeah, well, as always, brought to you by people who don't bully you around when it comes to good prices on printer ink. Cartridge World, over in 801 73rd Street, Windsor Heights. They have been underwriting our show since nearly the beginning. Joe over there, a great guy, the very opposite of a bully, bud.
Yeah, Cartridge World, it's great to have businesses where people can still know your name, know your needs, and I know that they're committed not only to the customer over there, but to environmentally friendly printing, so just a great Iowa staple.
Yeah, and so the idea, of course, being we always try to come up with things that you might be printing this season.
Yep.
So I don't know, maybe like your menus for cooking out on the grill, how's that?
Ah, we missed tax returns. That would have been a good one.
Oh, yeah.
All your tax documents.
Yes, yeah. Well, if you're that negligent and still haven't turned anything, the time's now, and Cartridge World can help you do that.
There you go.
As always, in addition, written by Mercy College of Health Sciences, where Bud and I have both taught and are currently... You have a summer course as well, right, Bud?
Yeah, doing bioethics this summer. I mean, the thing about Mercy is we're not messing around. The classes keep coming, but that's great because it means you can... finish your education in a timely manner, not, you know, tarry too long like I did with mine. So,
yeah, mchs.edu. The summer semester's begun, but there's also getting ready for fall. There's multiple degrees online that you can do. Like I said, online, you don't even have to be here in Des Moines. Wink, wink, people listening in Oklahoma. You can... of course, be here. We have accelerated programs. There's all sorts of great things to do. But I was reminded of this because I think, wasn't it this week that we had Nurses Appreciation Day?
Yeah, that was this week.
And so one of the nice things is getting people out in 3 years. We have plenty of people on my Facebook feed, you know, showing their nurse pride. And like I said, nurses are tough cookies. If I saw an actual street gang on one side of the street and a gang of nurses on the other, I would cross the street and walk in front of the gangs because nurses are tough people.
So does the Faith and Healing series take a hiatus during the summer, though?
Yeah, it does. We're getting geared up. We already have three people pretty much ready to go. One of them was actually on the show. I'm going to blank on his name. But do you remember who talked about? He's up in Minnesota too. He talked about the soil. Now, well, I've just ruined it, but you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, you put me on the spot. I'm sorry. Was it Chapman? Dr. Chapman?
Yeah, I think so. So the reason I bring up Minnesota, right, is we have someone else on the show today who teaches up there at St. Thomas, Bud. So who do we have coming today to speak with us?
Yeah, this is another fun guest for me, Dr. David Deevil at the University of St. Thomas. He's not only a first-rate intellectual, but a good friend of mine. He's the editor of Logos, a journal of Catholic thought and culture. He teaches at St. Thomas, his writings are out there on the interwebs, all sorts of places. But he's written a piece recently on diving into eternity. And he kind of toys with it. Well, I don't want to give anything away.
Yeah.
Diving into eternity. Sounds pretty awesome, folks.
Pretty suspenseful. And editor of Logos, I've always thought, Bud, you know, we have all these editors. You know how some guys, I'm not saying all of them that do this, but you know some guys, when they're not quite sure whether their girlfriend will say yes to a proposal, so they wait for, like, the division championships and the basketball playoffs to ask.
Okay.
Maybe we should do that with editors and propose things online live and say, like, so you're going to put it in your journal, and they'll be more likely to say yes, right?
Just, like, pressure them to publish different things?
Yeah, but live and on the air. I mean, that sounds like a good strategy.
Why wouldn't you want that in the journal?
Can you please explain to all of our listeners why you're telling us no?
Oh, man. I haven't thought about using the radio as a coercive tool, but this sounds intriguing.
We might need to have an entire show now for an hour, like, promising, like, don't worry, folks. Bo and Bud will only use the radio for good and not for their self-gain.
Yeah. Well, I will say about editing, now with my contribution in the Newman Studies Journal, you know, it's a yeoman's task. And I think what happens is, like, they find these journals and magazines find oftentimes, like, people who are teaching. They're like, you don't have anything better to do with your time, so we're going to have you edit this. It's actually really important work, but maybe underappreciated, I think, in our day and age.
That's right. And you have to go back and forth between, like, begging good people to write and then finding kind ways to say, like, you drew stick figures on a page and we will not publish this in our journal.
Yeah, you know, like, doctors at cocktail parties, they'll get cornered and people will ask them for medical advice. What happens to editors is anyone who's ever written something, they want you to see it.
Yeah, well, you heard it here first, folks, and if you stick around, we'll not only have more techniques for editing, because I'm sure some of you are riveted by that. We will actually talk about the themes of the show. So stick around, The Uncommon Good. We'll be back after this. But it's that time again of the show where we tell people how they can interact with us, 515-223-1150, with the Zip Whip Line. That's right, the Zip Whip Line. You can text us and ask live editorial questions like one space, two space, colon, semicolon, whatever else you might need. 515-223-1150, the Zip Whip Line. But how many comments do you think we're going to get today about editing?
That might not be the most popular topic, but we did talked about trapping our guests on the radio, and the Zip Whip Line is a great way, I think, to trap us. So if people want to pose those tough questions, we're raring and ready to go.
Zip Whip Line. 515-223-1150. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back after these messages.
If you've had an abortion and you're still hurting or feeling anxious, please know you're not alone. Help is available through a confidential, caring Rachel's Vineyard retreat for post-abortion healing. The weekend retreat runs June 22 to 24 near Carroll, Iowa. It's open to all women, men, and couples who have gone through an abortion. For more information, email Rachel at rachelshelpersofiowa@gmail.com or call 712-943-5550. Start your healing journey today.
Join us on June 7th for the 7th annual Gala for InnerVisions Healthcare. We'll be celebrating life, liberty, and happiness as we share all we've accomplished this past year. Noted broadcast and print journalist Cal Thomas will highlight how important our unplanned pregnancy clinic is for our community in Des Moines. We promise it'll be an evening that you'll long remember. For more information, visit ivhcare.org. And thanks for joining with InnerVisions Healthcare to empower women and save babies.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies, including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts. 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
Hey, what's for dinner tonight? The age-old question that seems to pop up into your head every day. Well, if you're in the mood for some fine dining and cozy atmosphere, Fire Creek Grill has hand-cut steaks cooked to perfection, along with a great selection of seafood and pasta. Now, they're under new Dowling alumni ownership, too, Meg and Sean Williams. Fire Creek Grill is located off South 50th Street in West Des Moines. To reserve your table today, online, firecreekgrill.com or 515-224-0500.
We are back with the Uncommon Good. Bud, you still with us, buddy?
Yep.
All right. Let's go ahead and introduce our guest for the show and get to talking.
Our guest this morning is a good friend of mine, David Diebel. He's editor of Logos, a journal of Catholic thought and culture. He also teaches as a professor at the Catholic Studies Program, University of St. Thomas. His writings have been featured in the Wall Street Journal, The Stream, Catholic World Report, really all over the interwebs. Dave, thanks for being with us this morning.
Hey, thank you, Bud. I'm glad to be with you.
So before we dive into the conversation proper, I'm curious, is it finals week there?
Next week is finals
week.
So I'm teaching my last classes today and Friday. So we're almost there.
Well, I appreciate your sacrifice of time because I know this is a crazy time of year for professors.
Yeah. No, I'm glad to do it. It's a little different to talk to you than to keep lecturing. So
yeah, that's right. Well, Dave, I wanted to have you on the show today. In part, I came across your recent article on the Catholic World Report entitled "Diving into Eternity," and you actually begin the piece with something that I experienced as a child. I'm probably going to butcher the word here, but is it a paraphobia?
I think that's how it's pronounced. Yes, it's that, the fear of eternity.
And so you said you experienced this some too growing up. Can you talk to our listeners about like this fear of eternity, what that's all about?
Well, it's interesting. It's the term, I actually didn't know the term until some time ago before I wrote the article, and I came across an article in The Atlantic about it, and it is not a recognized term by the American Psychiatric Association, but everybody, or at least a lot of people, recognize it. And it came for me in the form of nighttime terrors when I was a child, and it wasn't just a nameless fear, but it was this sort of sense that there was this vastness of the universe, and everything was kind of expanding and getting larger and bigger, and at the same time kind of crushing in on me. And I would, you know, my mom and dad would comfort me, and eventually, you know, I'd fall asleep or something. But it was an experience that struck me only later as being about a kind of intimation of what God is like.
Yeah, so in the article, you start with the fear, and I think this is probably a pretty common experience for people. Like this idea, you know, I've even talked to one of my own children about the idea of heaven can be both reassuring but also kind of disorienting. This, like, this idea that we feel like it's just going to be recurring events over and over.
Mm-hmm.
But you say, like, properly approached, this fear points to, like you said, the being of God and what it means to experience God's presence. So I really like the line in the article, like, the diver on the platform, the believer's task is not to tarry on the edge of reality that is God, but to plunge into the divine abyss despite our fears and allow ourselves to see that God dwells in the world everywhere. When you talk about plunging into the divine abyss, for some people that might sound sort of mysterious or esoteric. What do you have in view there?
Well, I mean, it's you know, jumping into the mystery of reality and accepting God's presence there. You know, like I said, I had these night terrors about sort of, you know, time and space getting larger and larger, and it was connected with that sense of heaven as this sort of endless event. And what I came to realize is that I don't need to avoid that thought. That's what, you know, if you read the Atlantic article that I cite, they basically say don't think about eternity, don't think about the everlasting. And what I came to think was, no, we need to think about it, but I need to experience it in the proper way by trying to find God in the world. And that is sometimes a difficult subject because God so often seems hidden. And sometimes God seems distorted in the way that we're looking. But I think more and more trying to find God and trying to dwell on the fact that God is present to me and present everywhere and is impossibly full and immense is something that I don't think it takes away the terror, but it reorients it and gives me a new sense of who God is. That, you know, C.S. Lewis described, you know, Aslan, the lion, who's the sort of Christ figure, that he is dangerous, but he's also good. And that sort of dangerous quality of God's immensity, his eternity, is something that I need to actually take shelter in and need to find in the midst of this life.
David, this is Bo. Thanks for coming on the show, and I'm going to apologize for the question I'm about to ask because it's going to like skew left field. I can hear Bud's already mad at me for doing this. But
everything's connected to everything. Yeah. That's what Chesterton said.
So you were talking about growing up, and so I was thinking about you guys both. And I've heard a lot of people talk about this, like fear of eternity, immensity. And I'd never had that, but it's not because I'm some holy child. I actually think it's because I'm white trash from Oklahoma. And this is what I mean. I grew up Southern Baptist, and a lot of our talk about eternity like goes back to that like song, Leaning on the Everlasting Arms, something that we like sang forever. And I realized that even though we, by that time in my family, were doing okay, there were long memories of things being bad, like from alcoholism to early deaths to poverty. And so eternity for that group, First Baptist Church, Waukeeta, Oklahoma, was just like when things would finally be okay.
Yeah.
And so here's where I'm going with this. For that time in my life, no one had this sort of fear.
Yeah.
However, now that most of my family is doing well, if not well off, if not totally middle class, I now hear from my aunts and uncles the question. I was going down to the monastery where I'm in Oblate in Oklahoma, and they go, well, what do you do all day there? And I'm like, well, they pray all day. They're like, that sounds boring. And I said, you're not going to like heaven very much.
Right.
And I realized that when you start to be comfortable enough, and maybe not comfortable like in just comforts, but when you start to have your place in the world, you start worrying about eternity. So it's very strange because I think there's a parallel. Like people who have it really bad off also don't have problems with theodicy nearly as people like we do. So I'm sorry to throw this question on you, but when you talk about this, this is what came to mind. Do you think there's something to that? That like the reason we have fear of eternity and we're worried about the problem of pain and evil has something to do with our position in the world nowadays?
Yeah, I think that might be true. You know, I mean, St. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15 that, you know, in his great passage about the resurrection, he has this line, I think it's verse 46 or something, but he says, first is the physical and then the spiritual. I think when people are fighting for their bare physical existence, it's hard to ask those higher level questions and hard to have those higher level fears. But when we've got our situation sort of nailed down, at least such that we're not, you know, fighting just to barely exist, then we are able to turn our attention to higher questions. And I think that's when the fear comes. And it's, you know, I mean, perhaps you can think of it as a blessing because, you know, God sort of impinges on our imagination in a way to make us fear him and to think about him when we are comfortable. When, you know, it's easy in certain ways when things are really bad to be made aware that we rely on God and our true home is in God. But when things are going well, that's when we often forget about God. And if we don't remember him in that healthy way and seek out his presence, it's going to be more fearful, right? Our conscience, I think, reacts against us and makes us realize that, no, there is a God who is out there who both is a judge and a redeemer, and we have to remember him.
Yeah, I think that starts to be interesting to think about, too, that there's a way in which, and I'm not saying this is for everyone, but I think this sometimes comes up with conversations I've had. People are worried that, like, heaven is going to be a long time, but not as cool as their current situation.
Right.
So they're almost like, it's like, you've won a free vacation. Everyone's like, oh, wow, to Branson. Oh, and, like, some people like Branson. Yeah. But you know what I mean, right? There's this idea that it's going to be eternal life, but maybe not what you think is cool. And like you said, that forces us to go like, okay, wait a minute. We probably have eternity wrong if we just think of it as endlessness rather than timelessness, which are two different things.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the great theologians and philosophers have often talked about eternity as not this sort of timeless, static state that just exists out there in which we are forever playing harps or maybe accordions, you know, into eternity.
But, I got accordion, yeah. Right, Glockenspiel.
That's right. My son plays the bagpipes, so some people think that's what, you know, either heaven or hell is. I'm not sure. But yeah, it's heaven is the fullness of time, and it is that lived present moment. And I think when we approach, like I say, when we dive into God's presence in the here and now, in the beautiful, in the good, but also in the very challenging and the problematic, I think we start to realize that it's not boring to be in God's presence. it is the thing that actually fills us, that we are now capable of fully living. And it's not, you know, I mean, I think it was Henry Ford who said that history is one damn thing after another. And a lot of people think of heaven that way. But really, if we think about heaven as, you know, one present moment in which we are going on in God's presence and we are happy, that's a different thing than this sort of endless succession of nothing. So I think we need to think more about heaven. People say this all the time. Well, this is the problem with religion, is that people are always thinking about that next life, and they should be thinking about this life. I think the problem is rather something different. We don't want to think about heaven and about what we should be like, and therefore we find it difficult then to come up with anything coherent to say about this life.
Amen. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and when you get into the Gospels, it's fascinating that for Christ and the vision that he paints for people, their eternal experience will be very much determined by how they live in this world. Like, it's funny with our students, Dave, when we talk to them about the Gospels, they get this sense, I think maybe from like televangelists and things, that Christianity is sort of like a pie in the sky promise for the future,
mm-hmm.
but it's abundant life now. I like the idea that you have in the article that in some ways it's important or it's significant that to approach God elicits a sort of fear. I think there's an analogy that we can make to the way that we understand angels, where in popular art, they're sort of infantilized, and, you know, like,
right.
We meet it
fat
through,
babies.
Like, yeah, QT images.
Save me, fat baby.
That's right.
In sacred scripture, whenever anyone comes into the presence of an angel, they're, you know, they're absolutely terrified. And so this kind of, like, fear that eternity can elicit can be a healthy thing. I don't know, with your students,
yeah.
as you talk about some of these matters.
Yeah, I mean, in fact, right now, I'm finishing up The Search for Happiness in the Catholic Tradition. We finish up with talking about The Great Divorce, C.S. Lewis's great story of what would happen if a busload of people from hell were sent into heaven and sort of given an opportunity to now choose joy. And, I think it's a wonderful story, because when you encounter the people who are in heaven, they are like gods, and they are beautiful. The greatest character in the entire book is a woman named Sarah Smith of Golders Green, and the narrator who's you know, taking this sort of Dante-like journey from hell to heaven says, is she, and you're thinking, is it the Virgin Mary? And the Beatrice character, George MacDonald, the 19th century writer, says, no, you don't know about her. This is Sarah Smith of Golders Green, you know, a neighborhood in London. And what did she do? Nothing great, but instead she became a mother to every child who came around her. She became, right, a person in whom anybody who touched her existence found themselves becoming more of themselves. And now she is this great and gigantic figure. And I think the students react to that really well, because the key to her existence was not what we often think in America, especially in this time, you know, what we do, what's on my resume. But instead, it's how she appealed to people who approached her, and she appealed to them as essentially bringing forth the love of God. And now she is a giant and a great figure for whom you might be confused at thinking, well, this has got to be like somebody important, right?
Well, so sorry, but on that note, I want to thank you for pointing to Christian Winman's My Bright Abyss. Like, that is a wonderful work, and I think more people should look at it. And My Bright Abyss, I know why, you know, you picked that, because you're talking about abyss and immensity.
Yeah.
But, like, it's really telling to me that, like, what you just pointed out with C.S. Lewis and then Winman's struggling with cancer and coming back to God, this starts to thread together, because if eternity isn't sort of like the great epilogue in the sky after we're done here in the credits roll, you start to say, like, weirdly enough, even the eternity of God is woven through something like this man's struggle with cancer, or that woman just being a mother to neighborhood children. It stops being like things you do, bam, the reward or the punishment. It starts to be, no, actually, these threads of the ever-living eternal moment of God are present here. And so the fear is like, it's almost like the fear comes because we put off eternity, but we also put off eternity because of the fear, and it starts being a sort of like circular snake eating its own tail.
Right.
And we have to break that apart to say, no, eternity is already here, busting through in golden threads if we see it.
That's right. I mean, and, you know, one thing that I think is helpful to point out to people is, you know, baptism is such a beautiful thing, but what people don't think about is really what's happening. God, you know, God is poured into the person in baptism. Every Catholic, every Christian who is baptized validly isn't just, you know, isn't just going through a rite, but instead has had God's very life poured into them. You know, I mean, the great imagery, most, you know, if you go into most Catholic churches and you see this font, this baptismal font, it's got eight sides. Those eight sides represent the reality that the Church Fathers like to talk about, that because of Christ now, we, you know, our time has now sort of jumped into eternity. Because of the resurrection, eternity is present among us. Seven indicates the history of the world, like the days of the week. Eight indicates this new and eighth and everlasting day. And so the baptismal font in which children are put down in there, right, they are being sort of dipped into eternity, and then this, you know, this shell-shaped, you know, dipper is used to pour water over their heads. And that shell represents St. Augustine's great, great story that he tells in his book on the Trinity about how he encountered a child on the beach who was, you know, using a shell to put water into this hole, and it kept overflowing. And he asked the kid, "What are you doing?" And the boy says, "I'm trying to fill this hole with the ocean." And Augustine thought to himself, "That's just nuts." But then he thought to himself, "Oh my, that's what I'm trying to do in writing a book about the Trinity." And then he thought a third time, and he thought, "Oh my goodness, that's what's happening in baptism, that God, the immense, the everlasting, has been poured into me." And the more that I live in that reality, the more I think the fear is going to grow in a different way, but it's also going to be transformed such that it's truly that fear, that holy fear, that reverence for God, and seeing that reverence everywhere. And I think the more we have that holy fear, the less we'll have that nagging sense of, "I don't want to go there. I don't want to go to heaven, and I don't want to be too near God."
Yeah, that's right. And this is probably a topic for another day, but I love those thoughts about baptism, David. And, you know, this kind of would strike my students as well sometimes when we talked about the theology of baptism, that I get nervous about, like, I've seen priests sometimes carry an infant through the church and kind of it becomes sort of like cute and sentimental.
Yeah.
And really at baptism we're being marked with the cross. To me, the biblical story that stands out is Abraham being willing to sacrifice Isaac. And, you know, that's a sign of Abraham's faith because God says, "You haven't withheld even your son from me." And at baptism, what we're in a sense saying is like, "I set you on a path towards the cross, and whatever God calls you to, you know, I'm willing to accept that as a part of God's will."
That's right. I mean, another way of talking about baptism is, you know, that it is eternity filling us, but also that, as you say, we are marked with the sign of Christ. We're made prophet, priest, and king, you know, in creation, and we are followers of Christ. We are little Christ, Christians. And so our journey is to completely offer ourselves to this God who is immense and full and mysterious in the mystery of this life, which often is very difficult to make sense of. You know, I don't know if you've ever read any of the works of Father Walter Chizik, the American Jesuit who was in the Gulag for many years, and he talked about learning this lesson in a Soviet prison camp. You know, as a priest, he knew it abstractly, but he only finally came to realize that after many years in a prison camp, that God was present to him, not, you know, out there and not simply in blessing, but God's will was present to him in the very people, the very problems, the very situations he was in, even in the midst of this camp. And it was there that he found happiness by surrendering to that mysterious presence of God that comes in a providence that we can't understand.
Well, this has been fascinating. I would dare to say that it's endlessly fascinating. Har, har, har. So if we're going to go to break right now, but if you stick with us, when we get back, I think this is a perfect way to transition to what actually you're doing up in the Twin Cities and talk about Catholic studies and how maybe a way it is preparation for this quote-unquote good eternity that we're talking about. So if everybody will stick around when we get back from the break, we'll continue our talk. This is The Uncommon Good. We'll see you all in a little bit. If you want to keep talking about not, you know, we're done with the editing stuff, but if you want to talk about eternity now, eternity, where there's endless possibilities to talk about, you can reach us not an infinite number of ways. Jeb hasn't got us there yet, but many ways. Facebook, Iowa Catholic Radio, our Twitter handle, at IA Catholic Radio. And then if you sign up for Intune, our biweekly e-newsletter, it's sent by email every other Wednesday. Complete, easy-to-navigate source for station headlines, event registration, program highlights, and more. Only 2 emails per month, so not an infinite amount to fill up your inbox, just the right amount. We don't bombard you, but we keep you up to date with everything that's been going on. So, like I said, Iowa Catholic Radio, Facebook, at IA Catholic Radio, Twitter handle, and then Intune biweekly newsletter, which you can sign up for at iowacatholicradio.com. We will be back after these messages.
The Uncommon Good.
It's strange. I was thinking about it. It feels like it's been raining during our show a lot.
I know. 1990s Bo would have like a very insightful, emotional response.
I'd like to think it's because
things.
We bring the thunder. I'm a suspicious person anyway, but I'm worried that we're being exiled.
What's uncommon, good, and features a bald eagle all at the same time? The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher, 10 a.m. every Wednesday.
R&R Realty is showing Jesus Christ at work through comical and informative programs like The Uncommon Good on Iowa Catholic Radio.
Hey, what's for dinner tonight? The age-old question that seems to pop up into your head every day. Well, if you're in the mood for some fine dining and cozy atmosphere, Fire Creek Grill has hand-cut steaks cooked to perfection, along with a great selection of seafood and pasta. Now, they're under new Dowling alumni ownership, too, Meg and Sean Williams. Fire Creek Grill is located off South 50th Street in West Des Moines. To reserve your table today, online, firecreekgrill.com or 515-224-0500.
Support for The Uncommon Good is provided by Cartridge World. Cartridge World is an industry leader delivering high-performance printing products that help you save time, money, and print great.
Perfect for businesses, home offices, college students, or busy moms trying to find affordable printing supplies including ink, toner, paper, or printers. For business customers, pickup and delivery are available. Products are guaranteed or full replacement.
Cartridge World, your low-cost, environmentally friendly printing experts, 801 73rd Street in Windsor Heights, 515-564-7400, and online at cartridgeworld.com.
I was a Methodist and now a seminarian for the Diocese of Des Moines. I'm Jason Lee, discerning the priesthood, actually began long before I was a Catholic. Once I converted to Catholicism my senior year in high school, I believe God was calling me to be a pastor in the Catholic Church. Exploring the priesthood has been a true blessing. If you want to explore a vocation to the priesthood, call Father Ross Parker at 515-237-5050.
We're back with The Uncommon Good. Bo Bonner, Dr. Bud Maher. Bud, how are you doing? Oh, I was getting ready to start dancing, but Jeb cut the music. So, Bud, that's your cue.
No, our guest this morning is a good friend of mine, Dave Deevil. He teaches theology at the University of St. Thomas. He's also the editor of Logos, a journal of Catholic thought and culture. And if you Google David Deevil, D-E-A-V-E-L, you'll find all sorts of great articles online. Dave, thanks for being back with us.
Hey, thank you again.
So we wanted to transition a bit to like a Catholic understanding of education, and as preparation for eternity, some of the theological ideas that we've been talking about. I thought a nice way to maybe transition this topic, Dave, is if you'd be willing to talk about, so you recently lost a close mentor of yours, Don Brill.
Yes.
And he was instrumental in getting the Catholic Studies program off and running at St. Thomas. But I think for all that I've heard of Don, he's one of these figures that was very likely a saint, but maybe lesser known in the United States, because he spent a lot of his time, you know, not writing the things that can advance your academic career necessarily, but really getting the nuts and bolts in place of this Catholic Studies program. What was, can you tell us a little bit about Don Brill and kind of the animating vision that he had for Catholic Studies at St. Thomas?
Yeah, Don was a University of Notre Dame graduate, and he experienced some of those great golden age Notre Dame professors like the great Frank O'Malley and Joseph Evans in philosophy and various others. And when he got out, he had this sense that he was still holding on to something of a cultural moment in which Catholicism had really reached into the deepest recesses of everything and was finding God there. And so he pursued graduate study at Strasbourg in Germany, and he wrote on John Henry Newman. He had fallen in love with Newman's thought, particularly Newman's thought on education. Simultaneously, he had discovered in some graduate historical work the great Christopher Dawson, the English Catholic historian, who really felt that for Catholic education to thrive, it had to be a look into culture in the light of the Incarnation. And so after a couple of initial teaching appointments, Don ended up here at the Twin Cities at St. Thomas, and he became the first lay chair of the theology department. And while he was there, he was trying to pursue what was gradually being lost in higher education, which was this unified look at knowledge, and particularly in the light of Catholic thought. And so he experimented with a few different programs and then gradually realized what he needed was something a little more formal. And so 25 years ago, he founded the Catholic Studies program here, which would take an interdisciplinary look at basically Christian culture, pagan culture, any kind of culture you have, all through the light of the Incarnation. And it grew in time from simply having a few students. Today we have about 250 to 300 majors and minors. And it is a program with courses on, I mentioned my Search for Happiness in the Catholic Tradition class. We have, of course, on different aspects of Catholic spirituality, the Church's social tradition. And we all approach these courses in an interdisciplinary fashion, not simply looking through one lens of historical study or theological study or philosophical study, but looking through them all at the same time. And so that vision has been a very powerful one. As you mentioned, Don, you know, could have written a lot of articles and gotten a lot of big grants for his own work and avoided teaching, but he didn't want to do that. What he wanted to do was resurrect and in many ways create anew an idea of the Catholic University that allowed students to see everything in a holistic view, just in the way that John Henry Newman talked about in the idea of a university. Sadly, Don died this February. He had two different types of leukemia, and they weren't able to treat them both. But his vision, I think, lives on, not only here at St. Thomas in the Catholic Studies program, but in about 20 or 30 other places around the country, where people have been looking at forming Catholic Studies programs or forming Catholic Studies departments. And even internationally, we have connections with Diocesan College of Bue in Cameroon, and they've essentially adopted our Catholic Studies core courses as the major for all students. So Don's work and the work of the Catholic Studies program here has borne a lot of fruit, both nationally and internationally. And I've been very, very blessed to be a part of that.
I really like the idea when you keep talking about the Incarnation and its stamp on all human endeavors, especially in terms of education. I mean, obviously, this is a line that connects all sorts of people that I think we would all mutually admire. When that gets down to the practicalities of teaching, I think that in a world ever more worried about being able to demonstrate through data what you're doing, and I'm not like trying to poo-poo that idea completely. I want to make sure that the people we're teaching at health science schools actually demonstrate that they know like where my spleen goes if they take it out. I'm
right.
Very happy about this. But I also think there's a way in which we go, how would you know, it's hard to measure in a sort of statistical way. We're not putting eternity in people. It's already there,
right.
But drawing it out.
Yeah.
And when you want to say like, what's your goal? It's quite a bold thing to say, but I think it's true. We want little eternities walking around incarnate in the world. And that starts to show the real social nature, of education, which, you know, rings with our show is how else are you going to improve things unless little eternities incarnated in, you know, not only their bodies, but their families and their communities. How else are you going to improve things unless that's what we're all about when we teach them things?
That's right. And that's not easily measurable. Like you say, it'd be good to have a metric for that, but really there isn't one. But I mean, the way we like to think about that is, you know, the stories of our students who come back. I mean, one of our projects, we're going to have a big gala here in the Twin Cities on December 8th, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, for our 25th anniversary with Bishop Robert Barron speaking. He's been a frequent guest of the Catholic Studies program. And we're going to highlight, you know, metrics are good, but what we want to highlight are the stories of, you know, our students who've gone out to be those little incarnations, you know, doing things not only professionally, but also vocationally. We have a large number of alums who are priests and religious in various orders, and a lot of great healthy families where people are struggling and trying their hardest to bring about, you know, little holy platoons of people, and they're making an effect in many ways. We have, you know, we have farmers and teachers, and we have lawyers and people in the tech industry. I even talked to one of our alums who's a male model. So I mean, you know,
we had to convince Bud not to go that route too.
So. That's right. I mean, I know Bud was going to be a hand model, but I don't know if there's a metric for that, but that's what the great thing is that maybe we can't measure it in one sense, but you can kind of see it when you know, when it's in front of you, people who are not perfect, but they are struggling to find God in the midst of their lives, and quite often being very successful, and they become people for whom others are drawn. So that, you know, for that, that's there's not a metric, but we're just at least looking for those stories to show that that's happening.
Well, and David, this kind of flows out of that last question, but say, you know, like a prospective student is getting a tour of your university, and you know, like you're talking to a parent, and he or she says to you, like, college education is becoming so expensive, and I'm just nervous about the direction of my kid's life. And they say, why should Susie or whoever it happens to be, why should they read C.S. Lewis or Boethius or Aristotle? I mean, what do you say to a parent who's like, why not just have my kids learn what they need to know to be successful in the career field that they're headed towards?
Well, I mean, I say if a career is all you're thinking about, there are cheaper ways of doing it than a university education. But what we have and what we promote is that sort of broad, true education, that formation of a mind that really helps people in the long run. Because, you know, we are more than just people who do jobs. We have to live a life. And what we've found in our alums, you know, I tell them, talk to our alums, because they find that not only are their lives benefited by having this broad view of the whole and by viewing it all in the light of Catholic truth, but also many of them talk about how they would not be able to go on in their own work life because they now have a broader view of things. They're able to be more successful because they see a bigger side of a bigger picture of even what they're doing, whether that's in banking or farming or whatever, because they have this sense that there is a big picture to things. So I tell them, you know, we actually encourage students to do a double major or to do multiple minors. The Catholic Studies major provides some of that big picture look, and then we encourage them to do something special and look at physics or education or biology or theology or whatever. But to get that big picture and then focus, and I think that it will benefit them. And again, I don't have a metric for it, but what I have is just loads of students who've come back and said, I'm so glad that, you know, that I had this kind of education alongside of the specialized education. So I think if you're gonna go to a university, you want to get a real university education that's about the big universal picture.
You know, we're of course a college here at Mercy College here in Des Moines, and so a lot of that we're already more focused. Like, you're going to be doing this health science career, but why we talk about the liberal arts or why we have the class, like for instance, Bud and I teach the servant leadership, I think actually is an example of what you're talking about as well. When you're going into health sciences, you can't help but deal with failures on a daily level, because if you're dealing with sick people, there's failures of health, failures of life, you know, they're going to die, all of these different things. And so it's really important for us to make the bigger picture, like you say, that, like, of course, your worth is not tied up in an impossible task, meaning every patient will eventually be a mortal patient, right? And the quicker you get over that and see the big picture about what healing is, that helps. I think to talk about, you know, the Catholic Studies program where you're at, it starts to be the same thing. You're going to go into business. You're going to be a farmer. You're going to be a mom and dad, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a way in which if all you judge on is success, then failures are devastating. But failures are, you can't get around them, right? Like, their crosses everyone must bear. And the thing I would say to parents, right, is you're going to have to figure out how to tell your child what the point of a failure is, the long defeat. And unless they have this wider, like you said, universal actual education, failures are just failures instead of new opportunities to die to yourself and be reborn. And it seems to me that's part of what you're saying, is with the broad education, the inevitable difficulties of life stop being just defeats, but become new moments of resurrection, as it were.
That's right. And I mean, even, you know, and here's the thing, is that even if you can't see what, you know, what the moment of resurrection is, it's not always immediately available to you, right? You have the broad vision that you can imagine that it is something, and God can be surprising at how he does this, and it might even be later. I mean, you know, Blessed Newman, he always said that that's how it works, is that sometimes, you know, you might have an idea for how things go, and you have failure, and maybe God brings your idea back 100 years later after you're dead. And you have to see that long picture, as you say, you used Tolkien's phrase, the long defeat. The long defeat is nevertheless the way in which God works out the big victory. And we have to wait on God, and as you say, we can't get down. And that's what I want my students to see, and that's what we all want our students to see, is that you're getting the big picture so that you can live and see yourself as part of this great chain of salvation history, in which God is working something out. And if you respond to him and you work your best, your success is much less important than whether you were faithful to seeing God's hand at work.
Yeah, and bringing up Blessed Newman, you know, Dave, I think he really had a keen sense of where higher education was going, even back in the mid-19th century, where there was already this movement to say, we're going to make our studies more rational by excluding God from the picture.
Right.
And excluding some of these questions about what is the telos of human existence, etc. But Newman really fought to say, no, if you remove theology from the curriculum, you're actually cutting off part of the study of reality, this whole sphere of reality. And it sounds like the Catholic Studies program up there in the Twin Cities, that you all are, you know, like raising the banner of the Catholic faith and unabashedly, you know, dealing with all the questions that the faith raises.
That's right. I mean, Newman understood this. You know, he said this was what was already happening in the 1820s and 1830s. People were trying to drop these big picture subjects and replace them with sort of, you know, technical knowledge. And he said, but that's not how the world works. And so if you don't address those big questions, other disciplines are going to start to tell you. You know, the economists are going to tell you that everything must go according to, you know, economic theory, or the physicists, you know, who have become new atheists will start telling you that physics accounts for it. And what you get is very imperfect and often damaging big pictures, simply because you've refused to let the true object of the big picture, the frame, God himself, into your understanding of the world. And that's what we're trying to do, is get them to see that God is in the world already, and that he is working, and that, you know, the technical knowledge, yes, that's important, but it's not just that knowledge, but it's true wisdom, which is ultimately the fear of the Lord.
Well, and to put this in stark terms that will get me into trouble with someone, I'm sure, the humanities, once it quote-unquote unmoored itself from God and the deep questions, didn't become, like, rigorously independent. It became something more like Stockholm Syndrome, you know, where you, like, learn to sympathize with your captors, and, like, it seems to me the bulk of humanities articles written is like, no, we like science. Thank you, science. Thank you, STEM.
Yeah, that's right.
We'll do what you want. And you're like, yeah. this was not the freedom that was supposedly offered to us.
That's right. Now, some people described it as, you know, how the humanities got science envy.
Yeah, that's exactly
sort
right.
Sort of a Freudian terminology. And it's true. They didn't become freed, but instead they tied themselves to often pseudoscientific conclusions, and I mean, quite often, frankly, a very limited political ideology. I mean, Don Briel, you know, our late mentor, he experienced that upon graduating from Notre Dame. He had gone out with all this excitement, and he volunteered with Bobby Kennedy's presidential campaign. Well, Bobby was, of course, shot at one point. But one of the things that Don would mention is that, you know, he could see then that too many Catholics were putting you know, all of their eggs into this political basket. And I think that's what happened in terms of the humanities quite often as well, is that it's not that they got rid of dogma and all that oppressive stuff. They just got little dogmas that were quite often very limited in nature, and they haven't been free, but that, you know, if you put on a white lab coat and say it's scientific, people are supposed to jump up and say, oh, well, okay.
Right.
But people are starting to reject that, I think.
Yeah.
They want something broader. They want a big picture. They want not knowledge, but wisdom.
Well, it's been fantastic. We could talk about this, like I say, endlessly, to make the pun, one more time. But we're ending the yeah. show. So Dr. David Devel, editor of Logos, a Catholic Journal of Catholic Thought and Culture, and a visiting assistant professor of Catholic Studies at the University of St. Thomas. David, is there anywhere that maybe people who are still interested in this can go look up on the interwebs to look any deeper into some of these things you're doing?
Yeah, if you go to stthomas.edu/Catholic Studies, or Cath Studies, I should say, Catholic Studies, you will find our department as well as our centers. We have some independent centers which focus on law, ethics, and public policy, Catholic social thought, and indeed Catholic leadership. But if you go to stthomas.edu, that's stthomas.edu/Catholic Studies, you can find us on the web, and you can find links to Logos, our journal, and all of our institutes.
Well, David, thanks so much for being on. It's been a pleasure, and I just know you have an open invitation to come back on. This has been great.
Thank you very much, Bud. Thank you, Bo.
Yep, thank you. And like I said, next time we'll extort you on air to accept one of our articles. But we'll talk about that later. See you later, David. Take care.
That sounds good. Thank you,
Bud. Well, Bud, it's that time again where, you know, we can't convince, no matter all our pleading, for Jeb to let us just overrun the next hour and talk to our guest.
Oh, I know. It's always so tempting. What's Jeb do on site to kind of shut things down?
The zip whip line. He doesn't have it loaded. Dang it!
And dirty looks.
Yeah. Now he's just
That's an
mad.
Actual whip there in the studio?
Yeah. He gets the whip down, and he's like, Bo, time to go to commercial.
Hard break.
Hard break. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. Jeb is not a violent person. We just want to say that again. Jeb is not a violent person. So, thank you for... there's jokes happening in here, Bud, that I can't tell the audience.
It sounds like the Charlie Brown teacher on my end, mumbling.
Well, thank you for, I'm always impressed when you have good friends, Bud, because one of your best ones is me, and that's not always the best measure of stuff. So thanks for having all these great friends to bring onto the air.
These are people like David at conferences that I just kind of corner, and they feel sorry for me, so they talk to me.
Hey, you could do worse in life. But, fascinating stuff. And like I said, they have a whole program up there. I know that we're trying to replicate that in our own way here at Mercy College. But I think that there's a lot of people in our diocese trying to do that. So it's wonderful to be a part of this, to try to reclaim, like we said, preparing people for eternity.
Yeah, I love the point that we were getting to at the end, that kind of like thinking to ourselves that we can become more rational by supposedly buttressing religious ideas that, you know, like people want to tell you in our culture are superstitious or whatnot. It doesn't make us more human. It makes us less human. And the thing that I love about places like where Dave's working and what you're doing at Mercy College is we're really challenging people to recover a very humane way of approaching whatever they happen to do in life. So it's a real blessing to be called to these sorts of tasks.
Well, may Jesus Christ, the Prince of Peace, the Eternal One who became incarnate for all of us, may he reign in our hearts, our families, our towns, our city, state, nation, the entire world. This is the Uncommon Good, and we will see you all next week. But there's all sorts of events happening in the diocese, too many to mention, to be quite honest. We have a few coming up. We just had a great one with, I was just told that the Man Up event from yesterday went fantastic. Tomorrow, actually, on Thursday, I'll be speaking for Novos about the Catholic social teaching. and its foundations and whatnot. We have, you know, several people getting ready to have stuff for the summer. Off on the horizon is the Christ Our Life concert, conference, excuse me. And like we said, all of this can be seen by going to iowacatholicradio.com. However, on the radio station, Bud, what can people expect daily and weekly to be a part of if they want to join our ministry?
I would really encourage you, if you're looking to grow deeper in your faith, to utilize the gifts that Iowa Catholic Radio makes available. You can start your day at 5 a.m. by going through the Bible in a year. That transitions right into the Rosary and Angelus. Bo, the Rosary is right after our show, right, too? I want to make sure I got that right.
Right before or after, guys. Jeb, when's the Rosary? Before or after our show? Before.
Okay, before.
Yeah, the station makes sure to ask Mary to help our show out. They're specifically worried about our show.
And then at the end of the day, too, all sorts of ways to grow deep in the faith alongside all of the great programming that we have.
And so, like we've always pointed out, this is not just something we do here at Iowa Catholic Radio. This is a ministry, and the ministry goes beyond we who speak on the radio or the people behind the boards or in the office. The ministry is you as well. So if you feel called to participate in this ministry, please remember us, nonprofit donations. Help us allow the words and the message of Jesus Christ to spread 24/7 beyond walls here in central Iowa and beyond.
I'm having my kids start an Iowa Catholic Radio piggy bank where they can put in their loose change, and then at Christmas time we're going to see how much is in there.
That's fantastic. Well, for Bud out in Pittsburgh, I'm Bo Bonner. Thanks to everybody who listens. Thanks to everybody who makes the show possible, and we will see you next week.
The Uncommon Good with Bo Bonner and Dr. Bud Maher is heard every week on wonderful Catholic stations like this one and anytime on podcast. Just search for The Uncommon Good.